The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Warning. This episode contains foul language, graphic descriptions of murder, and a perfect Joe Pesci impression.
Weirdos, you are listening to Keep It Weird, the podcast for all things strange, unusual, paranormal, supernatural, creepy, sticky, gross, scary, and everything in between. Each week, we sit down with a special guest and we talk about something weird. And this week, we are bringing you another special edition of Hometown Haunts. We are going to dive into some wild and woolly stories straight out of... Dun, 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 dun. New York, New York, baby. That's right. We're talking about cryptids, ghosties, murderers, and all things strange and bizarre coming out of the very juicy Big Apple and beyond. New York's a very large state. Don't bother buying tickets. This show today is going to a very dark stage off Broadway. My name is Lauren, and this is my lovely co-host, Ashley.
Hi, you're so good at those. The openings are so... When Lauren does the openings, it's like amazing, and when I do the openings, it's just like, here we are.
No. Yours recently have gotten very good.
Thank you. I have to keep up with you.
And joining us today is the very hilarious, very wonderful New York native himself, Steve Lacchioma.
Oh, Lacchioma. Thank you. That was a wonderful introduction. I didn't deserve that.
Yes, you did.
Oh,
and more. Let's shower him with compliments. Yeah. Your facial hair looks really great today.
Thank you. Your hair looks very nice.
Thank you.
Today too. It's styled perfectly.
Oh, guys.
You're very handsome. Oh. You're very funny.
I like the low-key, like just like gray t-shirt with the slacks and like the white shoes.
Stylish.
Like it looks really good.
Very LA hip.
I'm going to come out just to get compliments. Yeah.
Come on our show. We'll compliment you.
All right, that was Steve and his hair looked great today.
And that was that.
Well, thanks.
Welcome, Steve.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited about this. And I'm not just saying it because, you know, people
I'm so excited about this.
Yeah, polite.
No, I'm like super jazzed.
Good.
Super jazzed.
Yeah, you've been talking about monsters for a while.
As long as I've known you guys,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, pretty much. Listeners, you know Steve. We've talked about him on the show before. One, because his lovely, beautiful, perfect, amazing wife was on two episodes in season one, Glitch in the Maria, part one and two.
That's right.
She has to come on again, by the way.
Yeah, like, she's
that
so
was
good.
3 years ago. That's
right.
Insane.
And she was an amazing guest.
But also, you were the one that gave Joey the nickname Bobby Nosferatu.
Oh, that's right. That's right. When did I give him that nickname?
Because he had like a Twilight audition and you were like, who are you going to play? Bobby Nosferatu?
Oh, that's also like the most New York thing to say. Like
hey,
that's perfect for this episode.
Yeah,
hey, you play Bobby Nosferatu?
Bobby Nosferatu. What are you doing? I forget about it.
Oh my God.
Was a hit of our werewolf episode.
I told our listeners that, and so many people wrote in,
and they were like, Bobby Nosferatu is the funniest thing I've ever heard.
That's so interesting, because usually back east, all we do when we make fun of somebody, we just put the name Bobby in front of something.
Right.
Yep.
And then like, you know.
Bobby Bag of Donuts.
Bobby Bag of Donuts, mm-hmm. You know, Bobby Too Tall, Bobby.
Bobby Too Tall.
You know what I mean? If there's something like, hey, look at Bobby Long Nose over there, you know, and then it's like, yeah.
Oh, I so wish I had grown up on the East Coast just for this, you know?
Yeah.
Like I missed out on these
jokes. We grew up in like, y'all, heck, do you do meth here?
Yeah. Holy buckets.
Yeah.
No, that's only me, but still.
Yeah, you guys don't say needs to be, right?
We don't say to be.
To be.
Yeah. So it'll be like Gabby once held.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Instead of to be held, or like, my hair needs washed.
My hair needs washed. My hair needs
my
brushed.
My car needs washed. And Joe's like, you are missing words.
I've never noticed that I've done that, but I do.
He's
holy
like,
crap.
Your car needs washing, or your car needs to be washed. And I'm like, I don't have time for that.
My car needs washed.
Car needs washed. I got a
car. Car needs washed.
Yeah. So then you guys would be Bobby, you know, need some words. Yeah. So, hey, Bobby needs some words. What do you mean?
Bobby needs an English class.
Yes, that's it.
Oh, we boy. Can't help him. Oh.
Sorry.
Sorry.
So you're from New York.
Yeah,
yes,
from
so
New York.
Me, I am from New York. I grew up in the historic Hudson Valley, which was actually the perfect place to grow up because it was about an hour north of New York City. Mm-hmm. But in a, it's like a suburb of you know, the city of New York. And I was close enough to the Catskills, 20 minutes, you know, go up to the Adirondacks. I spent a lot of time exploring the great state, the Empire State of New York. So when you guys asked me to do this, I already had some, you know, some in the chamber, but I did, you know, but anyways, yes, I am a New Yorker through and through.
Very nice.
But I am a New York State individual through and through. I'm not just, you know,
you're not just a city boy.
Yeah, just because I lived in the Bronx doesn't mean, you know.
Well, because you moved to New York, what, after high school?
The city?
New York City.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So following, I went to college in New York, three colleges. I'm not a doctor, though, so you guys figure it out. had a good time in college. But after, I moved to the Bronx with my then girlfriend, now wife, Maria.
And you met your wife in high school?
Yeah, we went to the same high school in Newburgh. Or, shout out to Newburgh. Newburgh, if
Newburgh.
There's any Newburgh.
Maybe one.
There could be. Yeah, so we went to the same high school. We had a graduating class of like 1,000. So it was a big high school.
It's not like our graduating class where it's like, I knew everybody.
Yeah, I knew every single person in my graduating class.
I did too, believe it or not. But that's only because I'm very gregarious.
Right.
People. Sure. I wouldn't say everybody. I'm sure there's going to be like, you didn't know me. You know, like, sorry, Bobby.
Sorry about
Bobby,
it.
I don't know you.
Bobby.
So, but yeah, so we met in high school and then started kind of dating junior year of college. I ended up going to her university and we fell in love and moved in together. Lived in, you know, all around, you know, the five boroughs, not all five, maybe like three of the five.
Yeah.
For, you know, a dozen years and moved out here about 5 years ago. And now, you know, I don't know what I am. I'm not a New Yorker anymore, but I don't consider myself a Angeleno.
Right. I know, like, when do you become an Angeleno? Because
I've been here for a decade and I'm not.
Okay.
I know. I always tell people I've lived out here almost 11 years now, and they'll be like, oh, I guess you're officially an Angeleno. But I'm still like, but I don't, it doesn't feel right in my soul. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't belong here.
No, I still feel on the outside for sure.
Yeah.
But, I don't know.
But yeah. I mean,
you're a floater.
Kind of.
Yeah. I'm kind of just like, you know, a man without a home, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I have a home.
You don't live on the street, which is good.
An apartment, But yeah, so that's, you know, I'm sure you'll learn more about me as we go
along.
That's just me and
your interest in New York monster.
Yes, and I'll give you kind of where that came from too.
I love it.
Wonderful.
Right. Yeah.
So today we are obviously we're talking about all the crazy, creepy, spooky things in New York State. Mostly New York City, but New York State.
Exactly.
And we are going to start with true crime.
Yes.
So Lauren's going to start us off.
Love it. You guys all know how I feel about murders. So it was no surprise that I decided to do this topic of our New York episode. So what's funny is I'm doing two stories today and both stories ended up getting made into a movie. So I'm not going to say the movie until the end. I want to see if maybe you guys have heard of this movie.
Okay.
Because I don't know if I just don't know these films and have lived under a rock.
I'm immediately
going to
be like, single white female.
Yeah.
I know, right? I felt like such a dummy. But also, while doing my research, I looked up a couple podcasts to see. I always check other podcasts to see how much a murder has been done before I talk about it because I don't want to be overdone. Mm-hmm. One of the murders I'm doing, I found no podcasts on.
Fantastic.
And the other one only found three, which in the podcast world is insane.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. So I'm sort of like, maybe they are not that well known, but you two may shut me down. We'll see.
That's the reason we've never done an episode on like John Wayne Gacy.
Exactly.
Or like,
yeah, how many?
Precisely.
So many on that.
Yeah,
right?
I just, we know.
Yes.
He's not doing anything new.
Right. 100%.
We hope not.
We hope
pray that he's not. Okay, so the first one involves a couple named Martha Beck and Raymond Fernandez. So a little background first. Ray Fernandez was born in Hawaii. Then he was born to Spanish parents. So then after a while, they all moved to Spain. He lived in Spain for many years. Then he decided to serve in World War II. And then that, I'm just kind of summarizing him because that's not super important. But he served in World War II. And then he wanted to come back to the U.S. and seek work again. So he was actually on a ship back to the U.S. as a young adult when a large steel hatch on the ship fell and fractured his skull.
Oh, no.
Those close to him say after this incident, he was never quite the same. What do we always say in true crime stories? Head injuries are never a good sign.
So he was on his way back from the war and he was just like on a ship and got hit in the head.
And it was a total freak accident. Got hit in the head by this huge steel hatch.
What are you going to do? At that point, you're like, this is what was supposed to happen.
I guess so.
This was meant to be. Yep. Was totally fine from the war.
Maybe he avoided death in World War II, and then that happened. It was like a Final Destination thing.
He was being
you were supposed to get a head injury. Yep. You avoided it.
So here's the steel hatch
this thing
on a
over
ship that's
right
to
on
be
your head.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, he lived. He was okay, quote unquote. But yeah, his friends said he was never the same. His social skills started to worsen. He used to be a pretty social guy, could talk to anybody, but became a little awkward, a little uncomfortable, a little shy. And he also started engaging in strange sexual behavior with women and became a little more promiscuous. Oh. So this is where everything started going wrong, unfortunately, for this guy.
Sounds like it's going right.
Yeah,
sounds like life
in
took
what way?
Off from this moment. So he gets back to the U.S. He's hopping around from a few places, but eventually finds a home in New York City. He committed a few robberies, like a couple lesser crimes were happening. He wasn't living a great life. He ended up going to prison for a year, and his cellmate while in prison was teaching him voodoo and black magic.
Whoa.
And when he got out of prison, he claimed like this was his new lifestyle. He was going to start practicing black magic on the regular, and that he knew certain charms that could make any woman he wanted fall in love with him.
Child's play.
This is what he was. No. Yeah. Good guess.
I'm trying
though.
To guess though, maybe.
No, I like this, but that's not it.
Okay.
So he was released from prison living in New York, and there were these personal ads that could be placed that were called Lonely Hearts ads.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's
so,
sort of like Craigslist.
Exactly.
Casual encounters.
Yes,
or
like
whatever.
I would like to meet you. I'm lonely. I want a companion. I want a date, blah, blah, blah. So he sees these ads and he sees an opportunity. I'm a charming man. I have my black magic, and I'm going to make these women fall in love with me and then rob them for all they have. That's what
I
Ray
thought
says.
That was the actual, I'm a charming man.
No.
I have black magic. And they're like, ooh, I got to get this guy. Oh, my God.
That's who I've been looking for. I want the voodoo king.
Yeah, give me that Santeria.
No, he didn't place the ads. He was responding to women. That was me doing the voice that I thought Ray
got
was doing
it,
in his head.
It.
Of course.
Of course.
I thought he put that ad out. I was like, all right, get to the point.
You
why
know
not?
What?
Yeah.
Such
Don't
a better
lie
story.
About yourself.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, put it out there. Right. You know, someone will respond, I'm sure.
It's New York City. Someone's calling.
Exactly.
NYC, somebody's going to do it. So he is responding to these ads and his plan is I'm going to woo them, then rob them and leave without a trace. And he did start successfully doing this, unfortunately. So then let's flash over to Martha Beck, who is the partner in the story. She is from Florida. We all know how I feel about Florida. Sorry to say.
Hit or miss.
She had a, you know, some people are great. She had a pretty bad upbringing with an abusive mother and a brother who molested her on more than one occasion. She told her parents about it. No one believed her. So it kind of just got swept under the rug. So she grew up having very low self-esteem. She put all of her feelings into food. She gained a lot of weight. Which made her have even more issues with her self-esteem. So she actually did date a couple of guys around Pensacola where she lived in Florida, but they were always like horrible guys, treated her like crap, which was, it was all her self-worth. That's what she thought she deserved. She got pregnant twice from two different men, had two children from these men, and both of the men abandoned her. So she was totally alone, single mother, trying to raise these kids. She was able to go back to school, even though she was completely on her own, and eventually got a job as a nurse at a children's hospital in Pensacola, Florida in 1946, became obsessed with romance novels and finding her perfect ending because she had been, you know, so abandoned, left behind. So that's where we leave her. She places a Lonely Hearts ad in 1947. And apparently Ray, who was in New York at the time, was also kind of traveling to other places because he saw her Florida ad and responded. So they start writing letters back and forth for a few months. Ray is trying to deceive her as he did other women. But when they finally decide to meet down in Florida, Ray falls in love with her.
Whoa.
He genuinely is like, wait, I don't want to rob this woman. I'm into her. She's raising these two kids and I'm actually kind of like digging this independent woman vibe she's got going on. So he decides not to rob her. They actually start having a real relationship. They fall in love.
You know what would be funny is if this wasn't a true crime story. This was just a really sweet story
what if
you
I
found
ended
online.
It?
And you're like, yeah. And I just wanted to throw that in because it really brought me hope.
I want there to be
America.
Hope for everybody.
And for Pensacola, Florida.
And for Pensacola,
too.
Florida. Yeah. They needed it, you know?
Uh-huh.
I wanted to bring light to the true crime community.
It's just like one of their neighbors dies and they're like, and no one knew who did it. But isn't that a sweet story?
Wasn't that cute? Like, aww. Ray and Martha, you know, they got together.
Go on. I'm so sorry.
No, I love that so much because so far this is lovely.
It
except
is.
That, you know, they had some rough times. But yes. So they fall in love. And then Ray says, I need to go back to New York for a little. You know, I've been away with you because I'm obsessed with you, but I need to get back and get things together. She's like, no problem. Then about a week later, she gets an abrupt firing from her job. I couldn't exactly find details why, but she gets fired from her job and decides, you know what? This is the perfect opportunity. I'm going to move up to New York and just be with Ray. We don't have to figure out this long distance thing anymore. This is where Martha takes a turn where you were just saying how jolly everything mm-hmm. is. She sends her children to live at the Salvation Army.
What?
And moves up to New York to alone be with Ray and just leaves her kids behind.
Yeah, see, no.
Okay, well,
so all
she
of a
deserves
sudden you're like,
everything
what?
That's yeah. coming to her.
Right. So she leaves her children behind and goes up there. And Ray is so excited to see her. And he's also so excited that she left her kids because to him, that shows that she's willing to devote all of her time to cater to him. And this is his number one lady, and he's okay. super stoked. Right. He's like, all right, so you know, they're meant for each other. They're selfish pieces of poop. Mm. So Ray decides now that he can trust her and he's in love with this woman, he's going to confess his crimes of what he's been doing. He's like, hey, I actually responded to your ad because this was kind of my scam, but then I fell in love with you and I didn't rob you. And instead of being appalled again, come on, Martha, get your shit together. She's like, cool, can I be on your team and we do this together?
Wow.
So then they come up with a scheme where she's going to, in different scenarios, play his sister or his sister-in-law. And every time Ray meets up with these women, they're either meeting at a restaurant. He's like, hey, I have to have my sister with me. Or they come over to his apartment. And he's like, my sister lives with me. And they make up some story about, you know, we had a bad childhood and we're like all each other has. So then these women start to feel secure and comfortable. I guess on multiple occasions, Martha said the women, when they saw a woman in the house, immediately felt at ease because they were like,
yeah.
Oh, there's a woman here. Like, this guy's like, not a creep.
He's
like,
not going to.
He has a sister. She's here. We're good. So she actually was helping the scam along. So they were still roping them in and they were able to rob them and vanish. And they were kind of just hopping around the city and doing this over and over. But however, in 1949, things got a little rough. Ray had gotten a little serious with a woman. The scam had gone a little too far, and he actually was kind of starting to like this woman. Mm-hmm. She was older, though, which is bizarre. Her name is Janet Fay, and she was 66 years old. But, I mean, hey.
He has
love is
interesting
love.
Taste so far.
Yeah, he's not the most normal guy. So he brings Janet back to stay at their apartment. They actually become engaged, and they're celebrating their engagement and drinking and hanging out, and they fall asleep in bed together. Most likely they slept together. We don't know for sure. And the next morning, Martha finds them and in a jealous rage, grabs a hammer and bashes Faye's head in with like no hesitation. And instead of Ray being appalled and saying like this went too far, Ray says, good job, honey, and starts to strangle her just to make sure she's absolutely dead.
Yeah, you gotta make sure.
Just gotta, you know, put the extra kill in there. Mm. So they make sure she's absolutely dead. They both feel happy for a moment, but then look at each other in complete panic of like, we've never killed anyone before. This was too far. They try to cover up the body the best they can, but they soon realize, like, we just gotta flee. We gotta get out of here. And the family, they had gotten wind that the family was starting to ask questions and snoop around. So they flee the city. And they make it to Grand Rapids, Michigan. And then they meet a woman named Delphine Downing, who was a young widow with a 2-year-old daughter. They charm her and they're able to stay with her for a week or so. And then now we're at February 28th, 1949, and things take a turn once again. Delphine became agitated and angry at Ray one night, as you do, because he was probably being a poop head.
Mm-hmm.
And Ray says, just here, take some sleeping pills. These will make you less anxious. You need to calm down. He gives her way too many and she knocks out almost instantly. So then her poor little 2-year-old daughter sees that her mother is unconscious and starts bawling her eyes out, as you'd expect, because she's terrified and doesn't know what's happening. So then Martha gets annoyed by the crying and begins to strangle this young daughter. She doesn't kill her. She just gets her to stop crying temporarily and gives her just kind of this fear of like, now you see who's in charge, little girl. So the girl just kind of cowers in the corner and quiets down. But then Ray starts to freak out and says, when Delphine, her mom, wakes up, she's going to freak out on us and see the bruising on her daughter's neck because you were just strangling her for like almost a minute. So, of course, the logical thing to do is I'm going to shoot her mom so that she doesn't wake up.
Right.
Because that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So he shoots Delphine while she's already unconscious. They kill her. And then the daughter starts crying, of course, because she is freaking terrified. And again, Martha just can't take it. So she drowns her in a water basin.
Oh,
so this is the torture they put
these
two poor
people.
How do these people
find each other?
I truly don't understand how, because you hear stories like this all the time. Not all the time, but there's a decent amount of like man, woman partners. I feel like we've done an episode on it actually before, where these horrible people find each other and agree to commit murder without even the blink of an eye. And I don't understand how those people find each other.
Well, you know, for all your listeners, there's someone for everyone. So if you're single, don't worry about it.
This should be our commercial.
I know, for all dating apps. Like, get out there, find your person.
That is really like, yeesh.
It's insane that they were able to just do this and just have no issue with it at all. So they murder both of these poor people and they cover up their bodies and bury them in the basement of this house. And they plan to just not stay there forever, but they're like, while we figure this out, we're just going to stay in here. But Delphine and her daughter were very well known in the neighborhood. So neighbors within a day are immediately suspicious. Why haven't we seen them come outside? They come snooping around. What's going on? So they call the cops and report the two missing. And they're very suspect of Martha and Ray because they're very bizarre. They're like, what are you doing here? So March 1st, 1949, which is only 2 days later, the police show up and arrest Martha and Ray because they were already on the lookout for them because of what happened in New York. And then this suspicion comes up. So they're like, you guys just come in with us. So they're brought back to New York to be tried. And they actually were charged with 17 murders. But the pair swears up and down that they only killed Janet Faye. They wouldn't even admit to Delphine and her daughter. They were like,
someone else.
That was somebody else. Like, we were here and it happened. They only confessed to Janet Faye. And they even tried to retract Janet a couple of times. They were both like in separate rooms for questioning. And there was blaming each other. And then there was trying to cover for each other. It was like they were so going back and forth. Do I love or hate this person? Do I throw them under the bus or not? So after a lot of back and forth, they finally were able to be charged with Janet Faye's murder with enough evidence. And they were both killed on the electric chair on March 8th, 1951, 2 years later.
Whoa.
Only for Janet Faye's murder, which is bullshit. But I mean, they were punished. They were killed.
Yeah.
But their final words were, Ray said, I just want to shout it out. I love Martha. What do the public know about love? That was his final quote. And Martha's was, my story is a love story, but only those tortured by love can know what I mean. I am not unfeeling, stupid, or moronic. I am a woman who had a great love and will always have it. Imprisonment in the death house has only strengthened my feeling for Raymond. And then they got electrocuted and died.
Okay.
I'm surprised. I mean, I guess back then it was a little bit more common that women would get the death penalty. Right. And it would actually, like, because there are women on death row right now, but they will likely never be executed.
Yes,
because Eileen Wuornos was the last woman to be executed by lethal injection.
Yeah.
And that was like when? 80-something?
Something like that.
The 90s, wasn't it the early 90s?
It might have been the early 90s. But
was
she was
it
the
that
last
recent? I mean, not that that's recent anymore, but
I get confused because I think of the movie Monster.
I know.
Well, when did Monster come out?
Like, well, when did Charlize there?
They listened to a lot of Journey in it, so it had to be the 80s.
Yeah,
so what's the movie?
Yeah, wait, can I guess?
Oh, sure. Yeah, please.
Okay.
Hold on.
Is it... It's not a Lifetime movie, right? Like Richard Grieco and Yasmin Bleeth didn't play these characters.
There was a Lifetime movie, but I believe like the main one was actually released in theaters.
Ooh, I don't know.
The Honeymoon Killers.
Yeah, I wouldn't have got that.
No.
And then there was also, I don't know if it was like Lifetime or Hallmark or one of those, but there was a made-for-TV movie called Lonely Hearts. A lot of people call them the Lonely Hearts Killers.
Oh, yeah, I think.
But Honeymoon Killers came out in the 70s and was like a cult classic, apparently.
Who played them? Anyone famous?
Let me look.
I don't think I recognize their names, but let me see. Boop, bop, beep, boop. starring. Yeah, I didn't. I that's why I didn't remember, because now their names: Shirley Stoller and Tony LoBianco.
Mm. Tony LoBianco sounds familiar, but maybe I'm just thinking of Steve Lacchioma.
Yeah, or Bobby LoBianco.
Definitely Bobby.
Hey, Bobby LoBianco. You know, the Honeymoon Killer guys, brother.
Well, honestly, yeah. That makes me feel better that you guys didn't know, because I was like, no. Who?
That story's horrifying. Yeah. Right? Where did his black magic go?
Yeah, I thought that really was going to come back. Yeah.
It's really open that I was going to enter the story again
that
later.
That didn't happen much. That's fair. I think he was trying to make it an excuse of like, the reason I get so many women is my voodoo. And it was really like, I think he was
manipulative,
finding the right women. Yeah. He had charm on maybe. Them.
Were there any pictures of them? Like, what did they look like? Was he like a good looking dude? Or
he's all right.
Yeah.
Lauren's okay. Like, I wouldn't
kick him out of bed.
I wouldn't.
Yeah, let me pull.
I wouldn't drown a 2-year-old in a bucket for him.
he's not a hideous beast, but I wouldn't call him handsome either. Oh my gosh, why won't it let me zoom in on this? Well, you're gonna have to look at this tiny photo.
That's fine.
He doesn't have a lot of hair, but he's also not like a horrific beast. And then Martha had glasses, a curly fro, and was a little bit overweight, as I said.
Okay.
So like, she was just kind of like the sister. Yeah. In the background, like, hi, I look harmless. He's like, fine.
Yeah, he looks like Malkovich or something like that. He's got like a Malkovich thing going on.
But I wouldn't be like, hey, handsome.
Hey.
Okay, yeah.
He's fine.
He's not.
Going to strangle anybody today?
Horrific. Yeah. He does look like he practices black magic and kills people.
He sure does, you know? But I believe it. Yeah, so there they are.
Okay.
Okay, and then I have another story that's also a movie that will be revealed at the end.
Unless we can guess.
Yes. Unless you guess it, which you're totally welcome to shout out.
Is this an easier guess than The Honeymoon Killers?
I would say, I would think that you've heard of this one. Okay. It's also a book that was pretty popular, but still not like completely mainstream. So I'm on the fence, but I think you guys know enough about movies that you could.
Okay,
so this is about a woman named Roseanne Quinn, also from New York.
What?
In May of 1972, she finally moved out on her own, lived in a studio apartment in Manhattan in a pretty nice neighborhood. And she lived in a very like happening area with lots of bars, lots of things to do. She was a very outgoing, cool little lady, wonderful woman. She taught at St. Joseph's School for the Deaf. I said deaf.
Jesus.
School for Deaf.
Spoiler alert.
She taught at St. Joseph's School for the Deaf in the Bronx, where she taught a class of 8-year-olds. And she was that woman that like always stayed late with the kids. She knew the families. She had a personal relationship with all the families, and she was just one of those people that went the extra mile. Again, she was also known for being so friendly, outgoing, kind. It's these people you always hear about where it's like once they're gone, someone is always like, they were perfect and wonderful. So she's hanging out in New York. She's teaching at the school. She does enjoy going out at night, sometimes by herself. She was known to be seen at this bar called WM Tweeds right across the street from her apartment. Where she would often go and just like read a book at the bar by herself, or sometimes she would leave with a gentleman at the end of the night.
Yeah.
I know, and that's important to mention.
She's living her best
later.
Life.
That she is.
Yes. I agree with you completely, but you'll hear some other things later.
Oh.
So, yes, I had to say it because so much of this infuriates me. Okay, so she's living her best life, in my opinion. She's a wonderful woman. She gets hers with some guys at the bar.
She gets laid.
So on the evening of New Year's Day, 1973, so January 1st, Roseanne Quinn goes across the street to WM Tweeds, where she's having a good time. It's pretty crowded. It's New Year's Day. People are off work. They're hanging out. So she meets a man named John Wayne Wilson and his friend and roommate, Gary Guest. I believe different articles have said different things. It was hard to piece it together. Some articles say that John Wayne Wilson was going by Charlie Smith at this time, but others are like, nope, he was just John Wilson. So I'm not positive on
that.
But
what?
I know.
Some people say
some articles say that he
that
went
John
by
Wayne
this
Smith
name.
Went by Charlie Wilson.
No. But oh, John Wayne Wilson went by Charlie
yes.
Smith. But yes, either way.
But still,
but
like
some
what
articles
is that
are
leap?
Like, no, but it's because the reason like I'm going to get into more of who he was, but it's like I just could not find one article. It's like, this is definitely it. There were some differing opinions, but it's not crazy important to the story other than he's kind of a shady guy. So he's there with his friend, Gary Guest, and they meet Quinn and are talking her up all night. Then his friend and roommate, Gary, leaves at around 11 p.m. He's like, I'm over this. And Wilson says he's going to stay. So they hang out at the bar until about 1 a.m. and they leave and go back to Quinn's apartment. They smoke marijuana and they attempt to have sex. And as Wilson later stated, he was unable to achieve an erection, and he claims that Quinn was insulting him and laughing at him and demanding that he get out. So an argument ensued, and after a bit of a struggle, Wilson found a kitchen knife and stabbed her 18 times in the neck and abdomen out of fear and anger and all the things. So after the murder, he covers up Quinn's body with a bathrobe, he showers, cleans the entire apartment, tries to wipe his prints, and gets out of there. He goes back to his apartment where Guest is, and he's like, "You didn't come home last night, buddy," because it's the next morning. Like, what happened? Wilson is in a tizzy, and he's like, I think I killed somebody. I have to get out of the city as soon as possible. And Guest is sort of like, okay, because then here's a little bit of the backstory on Wilson. When he first moved to New York, he was kind of always a hustler, like trying to make money in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
Said he had left a wife and kids behind in Miami and wasn't allowed to go back to Miami because he had a bit of a rap sheet, but would never disclose like what he did. But he's like, I'm not allowed back in Florida. I had to leave the wife and kids. I'm trying to make some money to send back to him. And also at one point he came on to Guest and like tried to sleep with him, and Guest is gay and was sort of like, are we doing this? Like, hey, I'm a gay man. I'm into it. But then he would immediately be like, no, man, I'm not gay, and had a little bit of a homophobic side. So he was just kind of like an off guy, but Guest trusted him for whatever reason and just, I think, wanted to take in this lost puppy. But he had a little bit of a rough side. He was secretive, possibly
he
closeted
had problems
gay.
Problems with his sexuality.
Yes, all of these things. So fast forward again. Wilson is saying, I need money. Can you help me out, dude? I have to get out of here. I'm going to go back for my wife and kids. And then I got to go back to Indiana where my family's living, like his parents. So he's like, I got to go. Guest doesn't fully believe him or understand what's going on, but he's sort of just like, whatever, dude, like, here's the money. Just do what you got to do. So he leaves. He goes back to Miami, gets his wife, Kathy, and his kids, and they fly to Indiana later on. So Quinn's body is not discovered until 2 days later on the morning of January 3rd when she doesn't show up to St. Joseph's School. She was always super responsible, always there. So they send a teacher home for a checkup, and they find her bloodied body under the bathrobe, which just must have been horrific. She was found dead. They had no leads. They couldn't find anything in the apartment that was a good lead. They went to all the bars in the local area. A couple of people remembered seeing her at Tweed's the night before, but said they don't remember who she left with, but they did remember Gary Guest, the roommate. So someone was able to give a description of him, and they get a police sketch out into the world. And Gary sees it and is like, oh, shit, that's my face. Looks exactly like me. They're going to think I had something to do with this. And also, I gave him money to flee. Maybe he was telling the truth about all of this, and I'm going to be an accessory, blah, blah, blah. So he's panicking. He calls his lawyer. He calls his therapist. He calls everyone under the sun, which I loved that part of the story. Like, he called his therapist first to be like, is this okay? And they all were like, you have to tell the police, man. There's no way around this. Like, I know you might get in trouble.
It's going to be way worse for you if you don't. Mm-hmm.
So he finally cracks, and it's not until March. Yeah, because this was all happening in January. In March, he finally goes forward and tells the police, and they are actually lenient with him, and they say, if you tell us the whereabouts of Wilson, then we will we'll give you immunity, and we just need to know where he is. He's the guy we're really after. So they tap Guest's phone, and he calls what's his toes? Wilson. John Wilson, to kind of be like, hey, man, like, how's it going? Are you still in Indiana? They get his whereabouts. They go to Indiana. They bring him back to New York and make an official arrest. And they are able to try him with her murder. He even confesses. He was like, there's no hiding this. Like, it's fine. So he is taken to, I forget the actual name of the prison because they call it the Tombs. Do you know about that?
Oh. It's not the Tombs. Yes, I've heard that.
Yeah. Oh, wait. The Manhattan Detention Complex, known as the Tombs.
Yeah. I don't even know if that's a thing anymore.
I don't think it is. Yeah. I think it was just maybe in the 70s and early 80s, but he was sent to the Tombs, stayed there for some weeks, and then was taken to Bellevue Hospital because they were trying to test him for brain damage, which is what his attorney was fighting for. Like, you guys, this wasn't him. He has brain damage, reason of insanity.
Was he also on the boat?
I was just going to say.
Coming back from World War II.
Did the shaft or whatever it's
called. He needed a better lawyer.
I know. Yeah. Exactly. So they take him to Bellevue for a few weeks, but the tests were actually never administered, and everyone just kind of hated this dude. So they just return him to the Tombs without testing.
Wow.
And they're like, screw this guy. Like, he's the worst. So he gets taken back to the tombs. He's diagnosed as suicidal. The cells for the suicidal watch were full, so they just placed him back in a regular cell. And again, we're like,
Epstein all
screw
over
screw you, dude. Exactly. And at one point in May, Wilson got into an argument with one of the prison guards saying, I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to do it. And the guard said, oh, do you want me to give you the sheets to do it? Taunting him back, threw sheets into his cell. And the next day he was found dead, hanging by the sheets that were thrown on him on May 5th, 1973. They started a quote unquote investigation into the circumstances of his death, but no charges were ever filed. And they kind of just left it alone because, again, they were like, bye, dude. So he killed himself in jail after all of the taunting.
Wow. What were you saying was going to come into play later when I was saying she's living her best life?
Oh, so then just, this, no, this is the best part. So the media, the reason that he wasn't found right away and why, like, everyone was just sort of like, I guess we'll put this sketch out and try. Like, they weren't looking for evidence. They weren't questioning enough people is because when they started their initial interviews, a lot of the neighbors and friends in the area started saying, yeah, I know Roseanne Quinn. She goes home with different guys almost every night, and some of them are pretty rough looking. Mm. One of her neighbors even said, I remember her getting in a screaming match with a guy that rolled out of her apartment into the street, and the next day seeing her with a black eye from said fight. So they were kind of saying, like, this is her fault.
She brought it on herself.
There was victim blaming going on. Like, the papers, this is why I said I hate the media. All of the papers, instead of saying just like, here's the sketch and look out for this guy, like a woman was murdered and brutally stabbed 18 times. It was like, here's a sketch of this guy. He went home with this woman who gets around. They were basically saying, like, known barfly and known promiscuous woman killed by maybe this guy. So let us know if you've seen anything. Like, the lead story,
which is not,
was about her sexuality.
Yeah, that's not going to be as compelling than, like, sweet school teacher always stayed after to help her kids, her deaf children,
the deaf 8-year-old children
stabbed 18 times.
Yeah, so that's why it infuriates me, because instead of that, like, saying how wonderful of a
who
woman
she actually was,
yeah, it was said that she was just like the sexual woman who brought home tough guys,
floozy,
and, like,
who deserved it.
She hung out with the wrong crowd, so she had this coming. So that was the lead story, which was unfortunate. Which, I mean, the sketch ended up bringing Gary to come forward and we end up catching the guy. So at least it worked to an extent. But I hate that she was played out that way, because people forget how wonderful she was. And nobody deserves to be brutally murdered the way she was, no matter what. Like, forget there was a murder that happened here. So
that's the problem I have so many with all the serial killers, you know, that prey on sex workers. Mm-hmm. And everyone's being like, well, they're sex workers. I'm like, they're still fucking people.
They're humans. You don't
and they're
care?
Making a living.
They're trying to find a way to make a living. Maybe it's the only option. And it's so sad. I hate that.
I mean she must have really went in on him too with the you know,
taunting.
Right
I mean,
please
to have him.
I guarantee she just maybe went like, you know,
that's like, probably
bummer.
Yeah.
And he was like,
and again, that's why I brought up him struggling with his sexuality, because it's like, oh, a woman's making fun of me not being able to get it up. She thinks I'm gay now. Nobody can think I'm gay. And this goes on and on.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's why. Yeah. And I wish I knew for sure if he changed his name or not. And maybe I'm going to do another deep dive tonight. Maybe I just didn't read enough articles, but I wonder if he was trying to, like, start a totally new life in New York. Cause maybe
it seems like
his wife from before, like, maybe he thought he was gay and made a comment to her. She caught him in some kind of affair and he was fleeing that. You know, I just wonder what exactly happened in Florida. Was he trying to start over as Charlie Smith? I don't know.
Wow. And so now the movie. The hard thing is there's so many movies that involve, unfortunately, you know, like, poor woman gets murdered by a horrible individual.
Yeah.
But, and this was seven. I'm also, side note, what's really remarkable is back in the 40s and the 70s, our legal things got done a lot quicker then, you know. It was like the murder happened on this day and then this person hung themselves a year later in jail. It's like, man, now I feel like people are on trial for like 10 years,
years.
Before they can hang
like
themselves.
Finally
in
sentenced. Yeah.
I know. In both of these cases, things happened within a year or two. And I was thinking that too while I was reading. I'm like, wow, it wasn't a decade later.
Our court systems get tied up in the dumbest shit these days. I actually just, on our bonus episode for this month, I talked about like funny court cases.
Yeah.
And there was this court case, I won't go into all the details, but basically this lawyer decides that he wants to sue God. because he was doing it to prove
that
how much dumb shit gets like tied up in our court systems. Mm-hmm. You know, because in the at first they're like, you can't sue God, like,
right?
You know, you can't sue God, and it's like, why?
Yeah.
This is the United States court. You believe in God. I can sue God for damages. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, God doesn't have an address. And it's like, you agree that God is all knowing. Yep. And therefore he knows about this case.
Right.
I can sue God. So it was all these like acquittals and like
the fact
they would
that
drop
they
the
were
case
putting
and
attention
he would,
to
yeah.
it in
yeah.
any way.
Yeah. And oh he gosh. Just like proved he did this over like the course of years.
It's
like
awful.
The case would get dropped and he would be like, well, I'm going to bring it back to you for this reason. And it was just to prove that like, the dumbest stuff mm-hmm. ties up our court systems.
It's so bad shit.
But back insane. In the '70s, it's literally like, you did this?
Oh,
you're going to jail.
We're
going to
get this done. Yeah.
Not only jail, the tombs.
The tombs.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen. Yes.
When did the movie come out?
1977.
Oh,
okay. Oh shit.
So it's older. I know. But I mean, a very famous woman starred in it, which is why I thought you might know it. But.
'77 Year, a lot of good movies came out in '77
A lot of good
the
movies
book came out in '75 Movie in '77 and then I believe there were a couple like true crime shows on it that came out.
I don't know. I'm not gonna Mm-mm. pretend.
No, me neither.
It's called Looking for Mr. Goodbar.
Oh wait,
which I had actually heard of.
I honestly,
never seen.
Honestly thought
and
that
Diane
movie
Keaton.
Was about
That's
the
right.
Candy bar.
Nope. Looking for Mr. Goodbar was about looking for the guy who charmed this woman in the bar and then murdered her.
Wow.
Goodbar.
Diane Keaton starred in it.
Wow.
So that was a big
starred
deal.
In it, she was
starred
the one
movie.
That got murdered?
Yep. She played the main girl. She was very young at the time.
Yeah.
I think this was around Annie Hall time. So she was, that definitely overshadowed this. But
yeah.
Looking for Mr. Goodbar, the book came out in '75, movie in '77. And then Investigation Discovery in 2015 did a docuseries on it called A Crime to Remember that apparently is like okay.
That
so
apparently
there
is
go.
Like passable. Oh
like,
gosh.
It's yeah. fine, I suppose. So,
it was
yeah.
made.
It was made. You know, it was out there.
Discovery ID. I was in a couple reenactments.
I was going to say, I feel like I know a lot of actors in those.
Yeah.
Which ones? Can I watch you?
Yeah, actually. Yeah. I got to look it up. I forget. But it was in the 70s and I got to rock a mustache and I got to, it was really good. And they liked me and they brought me back.
Nice.
To play another character.
Not surprising.
Yeah.
I could see you doing a good job.
I
was in a reenactment too.
You were. What was yours again? Wasn't it kind of weird?
And it was for Animal Planet.
Yes.
And it was the ones where like when animals attack, basically.
Yes.
It was like I survived, but for animal attacks. And I got
Sorry
chased by
that.
An elephant.
So what did wait, hold
remember
on.
Remember this so well now.
How did they do this then? Like what did they
We actually went up to one of those ranches in like in Southern California, but one of those ranches is like, we have giraffes here and
yeah.
we rescued them and we
right.
also have elephants. So we filmed there and They didn't film the elephant like actually like behind us
yeah,
like as we were running.
Yeah.
But basically my character, the woman that I was playing, and I actually got to meet her, which was cool.
Yeah.
She was like on, I don't remember if it was like a safari with this other guy, but they got too close to these wild elephants and there was an infant with them and they didn't know.
Mm.
And the elephants charged them and like completely gored this guy.
Oh
I mean,
God.
Trampled him and gored him, mm-hmm. and she saved his life.
Oh,
what?
Like she managed to like, she gave him a shot. She like stitched him up. She managed to get him
a
like
lot of tourniquets. With
even
yeah.
though he was
yeah.
like completely falling
gored.
Apart. Oh my
yeah,
God.
And she managed to get him to wherever to be actually treated. But yeah,
yeah.
she saved his life.
Wow.
So like, I'm
Dang.
A hero basically.
Yeah, you
nice.
Are.
It was Gosh. Special. I only saw it once, and then I
well, I'm gonna try to
vowed
find
to
it.
Never watch it again.
It.
Yeah, I'm gonna find both of yours
yeah,
tonight.
I'll
know
let
what
you
I'm
know what mine
now.
Is.
Yeah,
yeah,
he's like, I want
I'll,
you to
yeah,
see.
Yeah, I'll
mine.
Show you. I think I might even have it on my reel.
While on the subject of crime, just really quick, these were just like fun little tidbits to throw in. I'm not even gonna super read them. I just wanna.
Yeah, I gotta super read them.
Like, I'm only gonna like normal read them.
Okay,
not be
okay.
not
yeah.
superhero
sure.
read. Them.
Completely
yeah.
monotone.
Yeah.
So in 1881.
In 1881. No, I just wanted to read some of New York's weirdest crimes while on the subject. So
yes.
New Yorkers were rioting over straw hats being worn.
Yeah, that was serious back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day in 1919, they would like snatch the straw hats, trample them, like punch the person in the face. Like there was a straw hat riot back in the old days. Yeah. Yep. Then in 2003, a 500-pound tiger was discovered in a public housing complex. The tiger was named Ming, and he was in a Harlem apartment, just chilling, 500 pounds. What else? Oh, a dude robs a pizza store and he steals the wrong type of dough and came back with a gun and demanded the right one. And they were like, no. Yeah. And he got caught and it was fine. But
that was Bobby Bag of Dough.
Bag of Dough.
He was like, hey, the tiger thing I remember vividly, actually. That was, 2003. So I was in college. I don't know if I was at Hofstra or doesn't matter.
But you were there.
I was there and it was such big news and it was all over like, you know, Channel 4, Channel 2, and they had video of the cops. No, well, what the cops did is they rappelled down the side of the, it was one of those big skyscraper projects, you know, and he rappelled from another with a trank gun and they shot out the window first.
Yeah.
And then he had to shoot the tiger with the tranquilizer. But they interviewed the guy, and the NYPD guys are always the same guys. Like, as I rappelled down the side of the building, I noticed there was a tiger in the apartment, and it's like
every New York City cop is always Joe Pesci.
It is, but
he'd be a little high. I went in there, there's a fucking tiger. I said, what are you going to do? Where's my money, Tiger? I don't care that you got stripes. You owe me money.
It's so good.
But the cops said that the tiger charged at him, and when he smacked into the side of the wall.
Yeah.
He said he could feel like the boom, because he was resting along the wall. It was that powerful.
Wow.
And when they went into the building, when they went into the apartment, there were claw marks on the ceiling from this tiger stretching and sharpening it, like, you know, when your cat
it's
is
a cat.
Yeah. But that was a big deal. Whoa. Yeah, I remember that.
Well, that's crazy.
But like that's a lot of New York. There's a lot, I'm telling you, there's a lot of that dude, but they found out like wolves and crocodiles in this guy's apartment too.
Yeah. So it wasn't just the tiger, it's just the tiger got the biggest.
Yeah.
Which he obviously got it when it was a baby, right?
Yeah, I think so. They said it was a cub. Yeah, there was a cub that was just hanging out, but nobody realized just how big he was going to be when he grew up.
Wow.
And he was huge.
Like, I never get that. You never saw a tiger in like a...
I know, I'm like, why? Yeah. It's not going to stay this little. It's going to be huge.
You ever hear of pygmy tigers? No, you hear of face-eating tigers.
Yeah, it's going to be large. But yeah, he did get it as a cub, and then it grew up. But its name was Ming, if anyone cared.
I do.
Yeah.
And that's New York.
Well, those were really good crimes. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And I hadn't heard of any of them.
I'm so glad. Mm-hmm. I tried to find more obscure.
So those were fresh ones for you then.
Those nice and fresh.
Nice, hot and fresh.
Wow.
Hot and fresh.
Straight out of the oven.
Except the Ming.
Hot and ready.
Except for Ming, yeah.
Yeah, we all knew about Ming.
I knew about Ming.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, those were awesome. I didn't know about those.
Oh, that makes me even happier, Mr. New York.
Yeah.
Bobby New York.
Bobby New York. What do you know about crime? I know it all. Ask me a question. He's dead. There you go. There's the answer.
There's the crime. That's all the time we have this week for Keep It Weird. This episode ended up being so long and so good and so full of weird that it turned into a 3-part episode. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to our show as usual. You rule. Thank you so much to Steve for coming on the show this week and next. He's so funny. I can't wait for you to hear more from him. Next week, he's going to be venturing out of New York City and teaching us about all the monsters in New York State. So tune in to get your cryptid fix. The following week, I will be bringing you all of the most haunted places. And guys, New York is so freaking haunted. We have 4 more episodes coming up this year, 2 more of these New York hometown haunts, a follow-up to our John Shakespeare murder investigation, and a very special finale. After that, we'll be going on hiatus until late February, as we do every year, but if you are a member of our Patreon, you will be receiving new episodes and newsletters during our break. So if that's something that you're interested in, head over to www.patreon.com/keepitweirdpodcast. Also, check out our Etsy page at www.etsy.com/shop/keepitweirdpodcast and get yourself a t-shirt, tank top, hoodie, mug, or button to represent Keep It Weird wherever you go. If you're a member of our Patreon, make sure you check in with us to get your promo code for 10 to 20% off. Follow us on social media at Keep It Weirdcast across all platforms if you don't already. Oh my gosh, they're playing me out. Have a good week, guys. Keep it weird.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through.